Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Paredes clubs this to left field. Fraley leaps in. Fraley made the catch. Are you serious? Shed gets two. Wow. Unreal.
And joining us now, it is the subject of that highlight, Jake Fraley on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hey, Jake, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
We are wonderful, and it has been so fun to watch what you've been able to do these past couple weeks. It's been phenomenal. You're leading the majors in RBI since June 3rd. What's been the key to the hot streak?
I've had this question asked before, and everybody thinks I'm a little crazy or cliche with my answer, but, I mean, it's as simple as I can put it, and it's just having fun. It really is. It's just really kind of getting myself to a point where, you know, understanding just how hard this game is, especially in the big leagues, and just trying to find kind of like an edge for myself with just enjoying myself and allowing myself to just kind of take it day by day.
You know, Jake, that it's so important as an athlete that you take that approach. Been through it, walked through it myself, not the level that you're doing, but it's one of those things that, can you walk us through maybe the development of you getting to that point? Is it going through the injury and sitting out and understanding how, you know, small time you have to play this game, it can be taken away from you just like that? Has it just been over the course of time with your experience? What has helped you get to that point where you can just let loose and have fun with it?
Yeah, it's two things. One of the main points being what you just talked about it being kind of like the injury side of things, where obviously you can't control that. It's kind of, you know, part of the game. So it's kind of gives you an aspect from the mental side of just understanding how precious those, you know, times are when you are out there, right? And then my other side of it is I'm a believer in Jesus. And for me, just that understanding of what his grace truly means, it's something that is, you know, very overlooked, especially from, you know, the body of Christ and the church. But it's such an important aspect, if not the most important, because it gives you an understanding of just how hollow this game and really a lot of things in life are, that you kind of search for that joy and happiness and that, you know, you always come up short, and especially in the game of baseball. So for me, it's really just kind of getting alone with my Father and understanding what it means to really rest in that grace. And when you're resting in that every day, you're allowing yourself to kind of live from that true joy and true happiness that allows you to kind of carry that over into what you do in your day-to-day activities, which obviously for me is baseball. So it's really allowed me to kind of have that liberating and that freedom in what I'm doing every day.
Has that been able to also kind of keep you from reading too much into the low moments or soaring too high on the high moments, kind of that balance of knowing that there are other things that are more important and you got to have kind of grace with that too?
Say that again, you broke up.
Oh, I said, is that kind of that knowledge and that feeling and knowing that kind of what keeps you from sinking too much in bad moments too?
Yeah, no, of course. It allows you to kind of get to a point where when you have those bad moments, when you have those bad moments, it kind of gets to a point where it just takes that pressure off you, right? It gets you to a point where, you know, you, again, that liberating and that kind of freedom and just playing the game for what is in front of you, and not kind of making a bigger situation out of what already is a big situation.
You know, Jake, love hearing your kids in the background. I've got two young kids myself. What are the ages of your kids?
My son is 4. My daughter's 3.
Okay. I've got a 5-year-old and one that's going to be 2. So when you're going through all this, you're a young dad, you're married, you're going through this process. It's not just balancing your you as a player on the field, but, you know, your family life as well. How have you been able to do that, and you and your wife kind of working through that over time?
Yeah. I mean, like you just said, you know, you understand it. So it's tough. It's hard. But it's also the biggest blessing in the world. It puts a whole new spin of meaning, on everything that we do, right? Cause everything's for them. Everything's trying to set up a future for them, trying to teach them kind of the ins and outs of just day to day life. And obviously when they're little like that, I mean, they're just learning so many things for the first time. So it's just such a cool thing to, you know, to really stop and kind of embrace all of that, right? And getting them to talk about it, to understand it, and then, you know, and then obviously get to the point where they apply all of those little things that they're being taught. So it's just a lot of very cool experiences like that, that just make it so much worthwhile with, you know, how hard it is with during the season being away so long, and, you know, a lot of pressure being put on my wife with that whole aspect of me being away. Which my wife is the same. She does so much for our family, allows us all to kind of flow the way that it needs to. And again, going back to the aspect of us walking with Christ, you know, him being the center of our marriage and our family, again, just that liberation and that freedom and that, because, you know, with the marriage aspect of it, you kind of, you know, you search for things in each other, right? Between the husband and wife, and especially with two little ones. But when you understand that, you know, a lot of those things that you're searching for in the other person that you're not necessarily going to get, especially to the full extent of what you want, you realize that you're searching for the very things that are in Christ. And it takes a lot of pressure off of yourselves, between each other, right? The husband and the wife, and especially with the kids too. So it allows you to kind of take that pressure off of that aspect of it. And you're now receiving what, you know, your heart and, kind of like your mind is kind of searching for, which is in Christ, and it allows everything to kind of take a notch down and just enjoy every moment.
You know, Jake, the beauty of it is you guys get to be at home here during this homestand over the weekend. Father's Day is this weekend. The big question is, if the kids end up making you something for breakfast, are you eating it, or are you, you know, kind of doing a nibble and throwing it away later? What's the strategy there?
No, I'll give it a nibble, because
you never know.
My son has a personality where if he wants to make something or draw something, or, you know, not necessarily from the eating side, but just anything that he does for me or my wife or even my daughter, like, he wants you to be like all in on it, acknowledge it. So I don't think I'll be able to get up from the table unless I take a nibble off of it.
You got to stomach it for love. You just got to do it. Now,
exactly.
What I want to know is if your kids are as into sports, because Jake has been telling Curtis and I about the trials and tribulations of his eldest, Jackson, learning football. And there was one the other day when, yeah. Was it he ran the wrong way?
He ran the wrong way, and then also, you know, just kind of waited for the kids to kind of run by him and then go chase him.
I love,
you know,
it.
So you just, you know, obviously you're just trying to let them have fun at this point, but you are, you know, you're walking through that balance of you want them to enjoy it just as much as you do, you know?
Yeah, no, of course. It's just, it's actually funny that you said ran the wrong way, because my son has, he obviously started T-ball back in the off season. And so when we started that, and still to this day, I don't know what he has in his mind that he just can't figure it out, because we're in the backyard practicing, I mean, so much, and he gets it every time that we're in the backyard. But when we get into the game, he just never remembers to run to first base. He always runs to third base. And so, like, that whole aspect of just trying to get him to understand all of that, I mean, it's such a cool experience to, you know, just see him growing with that. But, man, for whatever it is, they just cannot get it.
Technically an extra base.
Simple thing.
It's so funny. It's so true, man. It's so true. And you're just like, it's the littlest things. You're trying so hard not to overdo it. You just want them to have fun, but it gets to you. Jake, you have been able, since you've been called up, to have an incredible run of success. It's been so fun to watch you do your thing out there. But you have also been able to do some things just as kids in the backyard playing the game. Things that you dream of, hitting a grand slam.
Making a phenomenal catch to save a home run in extra.
Exactly. What is it like to go through that, experience that moment, and you know, ultimately look back on it and also hear the call of Aaron Goldsmith? You broke him. Like, you literally broke him.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you hit the head right on the head on the nail, and it's just, you know, you have all these things, right, when you're growing up. And even, I mean, you know, once you get old, you know, older, and you still haven't done it, it's still something that you think about, dream about. And it's, you know, those things, those few things that, you know, I was able to do this past week. And it's been a blessing. It's been very cool to finally kind of like see that come to play. And I keep telling everyone with the, you know, I don't know how many times through a career you have multiple chances with bases loaded to do something like a grand slam. But as far as the catch, that's kind of something that, you know, as far as the opportunity that you have, to the extent of what that opportunity was, is very rare. It's something that doesn't come along very often. And quite honestly, it's something that's so rare that I might not ever get another opportunity in my entire career. So the fact that you have the opportunity, plus, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to, you know, complete that play and do that, you know, was obviously, I was very, very fortunate. And, you know, I think it's something that I was actually just telling my wife that it took me probably about 3 or 4 days, actually probably more than that. It wasn't until we were coming back from this long road trip that we had that it kind of hit me like, man, that might have been like a once in a lifetime play. I might never get that opportunity again. So it took a while to hit me on how big of an opportunity I had in that moment.
You know, Jake, last question that I have that we have for you, and we really appreciate you taking the time with us. It's been a really fun interview, getting to know you a little bit more. But as you're going forward, we talked to Scott Servais on our show on Tuesday, or just yesterday, and he had said that one of the big things that he had seen from you is how engaged you are with everybody around you and how much your presence has been felt and how much he has enjoyed seeing you take that step forward. Obviously now your actions speak louder than your words. Sometimes you feel more comfortable as you are doing. What has it been like for you to contribute to this team, and as you look forward to continue to contribute to this team as you guys are trying to get out on the other side of this rebuilding process and actually build this thing into a contender?
No, yeah. I pride myself in making sure that I'm aware of everybody that's around me, but not just being aware with, you know, the highs and the, you know, hellos and byes and all of those simple things that are very easy to do, but also engaging and getting to know people around me. And again, the more you talk about me, the more you're going to realize that my entire life is completely spent around Christ. And his, when you read the gospel, the number one thing is being a servant first. And that's what, you know, I live my life by. So for me in that clubhouse, you know, you're around a lot of people, across this organization, more than I'm with my family, through a baseball season. And so I really pride myself in making sure that I'm getting to know each and every person around me. Every day I get to the field, I'm spending time, talking to them, understanding what they're doing. And so for me, it's just kind of like a second nature for me at this point. And it's just something that I love to do. I enjoy to do. And it's just, it's awesome. Like I said, you when you're around such great people for so long, it's an easy thing to do, because you're showing up every day with a smile on your face, and you get to see everybody else's smiles. And when you're creating a culture like that, you start to see it, you know, unfolding. And obviously, it takes time, right? A winning culture takes time; it doesn't happen overnight. But when you start to see it kind of evolving and forming into that with all the pieces, it's not hard to get extremely excited about what's to come.
Yeah, well said. He is Mariners outfielder Jake Fraley. Jake, thanks so much for taking the time. And I know I speak for both Jake, our Jake, and myself when I say wishing you a happy Father's Day this weekend. Hope you and the wife and the kids can spend some fun quality time together.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, guys. God bless you.
Yeah. All right. It is time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake Heaps. Which defensive...
I know, I need... As I said, Jake and I suddenly, like, lost myself
if
in what
Fraley,
I was saying.
If Fraley comes on again on our show, we're going to have to give him a nickname or call him by his last name. We can't have this confused.
I confused myself, and then I was stumped, and I'm staring at my show sheet, like, four down territory, and I was just like, yep, here we go. God.
Well, Jake Heaps...
Sorry, Jake Fraley.
Which defensive player does Pete Carroll have high expectations for heading into 2021?
The player that he has high expectations for is Marquise Blair. And hearing him talk about Marquise Blair to me was really encouraging. Not only does he feel like at this stage he isn't 100% healthy with his knee to where they want it to be, but he feels like overall the time that he had rehabbing, he became stronger. They feel like he has the ability to take the next step forward, and they're excited to have him out on the field. And they felt like they were really about to get into something special with Marquise Blair taking over on that nickel spot. He's got to earn it. Obviously, Ugo Amadi is not just going to give it to him, but Pete Carroll has high expectations for Marquise Blair heading into his third year as a pro, and I sure hope that Marquise Blair can really put together all of that talent that he has onto the field, because this guy can make a difference. He can be an impactful player. You talk about speed, you talk about playmaking ability, bringing the heat in terms of the hits. I think that Marquise Blair can do all of those things. They just got to get him on the field.
Second down. Stacy, how on earth...
Not my best hour.
Are the Seahawks going to be able to afford to pay all these guys?
So I know that a lot of you hearing this right now think, well, obviously you just kind of, you know, book out your salary cap hit into future years. And it seems like an obvious answer, but I see this question all the time. And I think that when we're talking about Dwayne Brown looking for an extension, talking about Jamal Adams looking for an extension, talking about Russell Wilson looking to be restructured, maybe, and, you know, DK Metcalf about to get paid, it's a totally fair question to ask. And I think the important thing to remember is that you can think of the salary cap as being more of like a horizontal bar into the future, as opposed to just pulling from money that you have that year or even next. So when we're talking about paying DK Metcalf, we're really looking at something like 2023, 2024, what's going to go into that year. Right now, I know it's because they don't have a lot of guys on their roster for 23, but right now, 2023 has $163 million in estimated cap space. The salary cap is also going to go up quite a way. So when we're talking about these cap hits and guys getting paid, that's going to be stretched out into the future. It's making some room for this year, although there are still decisions you're going to have to make. Are you going to be able to pay Julio Jones when you're going to pay DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett? Maybe not. You might have to make a sacrifice, or you might have to restructure something or do something. I tend to think that's why they were a little hesitant to take on Julio's contract. But you can pay Dwayne, Jamal, and you can restructure deals. You can pay Metcalf. It's certainly possible for them to do. So don't panic when you hear stuff like that. Just know that you're working a couple years into the future there.
Third down.
Someone call me Spacey Ross.
Wow.
Wow.
Isn't that what Brian calls you?
Oh, yeah.
Jake
can't even breathe.
How concerned are
you? Stop laughing about my real boyfriend, weirdo.
Jake, how concerned are you about D. Eskridge's toe injury?
Oh, let's see if I can do this.
He's red.
Let's go to cut number. Let's go to cut number three.
The early work that we saw with Dwayne Eskridge before his toe got banged up, that really kind of flared up. He looks totally legit to be a competitive aspect to this team. I don't have any question. His strength in his hands, his catching range, his explosiveness is really fast. And he had no trouble with any of the transitional stuff. They did not run as sophisticated a passing game as we have here, and so we didn't see stuff. But it wasn't because he couldn't run them. They just didn't ask their guys to run the stuff. He can do everything. So I'm really excited to see him go. His mentality has been strong. It's a real positive.
Now, all those things are great, and I'm excited about Dwayne Eskridge, and I think that D. Eskridge can be somebody that can perform at a high level, be an immediate impact player. But in terms of my concern level, a toe injury is no joke when it comes to a receiver, when it comes to a skill position player where their livelihood, and particularly for D. Eskridge, how explosive they can be, that's something that you have to keep an eye on. And I'm hoping that this is just going to be held within the confines of a couple weeks here in the offseason. It's no big deal. But not getting this time with Russell Wilson here during this mini camp and potentially not being able to get that time through the month of July, which you would hope that Russell Wilson and him would get together on a couple of occasions, that concerns me. And I'm hoping that they would, that he'll be able to get over this quickly, because if not, this would be 2 years in a row where you have a second-round pick that can't go. I mean, that would be incredibly disappointing. But I think the Seahawks are confident that this is going to be something that he can get over and that he'll be fine come training camp.
I'm going to go ahead and Nick's fourth down. I'm going to say that we converted it, took out the chains, and we moved them because we got some money to give away, Jake.
Oh,
that okay. was four down territory brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Today's Genuine Auto Glass code word is...
Alki. One word, Alki.
A-L-K-I. Alki, as in Alki Beach, only it's just Alki. You can enter that code word, Alki, at 710sports.com/win for your chance at a $250 Visa gift card. All right, Jake's going to be giving us his practice notes from Seahawks Mandatory Minicamp in about 15 minutes. Before we get to any of that, though, Derek Carr making it even harder to like him.
Good
That's
Lord.
Coming up next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. It's time for The Timeline, telling you the top stories you're going to see when you open up your phone, open up your laptop, and you go to Twitter, and you see some trending name or story, and you're going to say, why is that? Oh, well, we'll tell you. We'll break down everything you need to know. Let's start with this one. If you see Derek Carr trending, or maybe the Raiders trending, maybe you see, I don't even know, Gruden trending, well, it's probably because of what Derek Carr had to say. It was in an interview when he's asked about what would happen if he were traded or his future. Cut 12, this is what he had to say.
I've said it over and over again. I probably quit football if I had to play for somebody else. You know, I am a Raider for my entire life. I'm going to root for one team for the rest of my life, and it's the Raiders. I think we can all agree that if we were able to pull it off and win a championship here, that would feel much better than just piling a whole bunch of great players together and figuring, joining up and doing it that way. I'd rather go down with the ship, you know what I'm saying, if I have to. When I sign a contract, I completely, in my mind, have to fulfill that.
Now, I got to tell you guys, I have no like fundamental issue with this, but it is something people are panning. I kind of get why, but not really. I'm like, well, who cares if this guy wants to say this about being with the Raiders? The only person more upset about this than any of you guys are the Raiders, hoping that they might have been able to trade
Mike
Derek
Mayock.
Carr.
Yeah, he's probably
They're
just
like, thanks
what
a lot,
are
Derek.
You doing?
Thanks. No one's more mad
the
than
the reason
than
why
Mayock.
He's getting panned for this, because he's a liar. He would not retire if he got traded or if he had to go play somewhere else, Stacey. He would continue to keep playing. Why go to the dramatic?
Every player panders to their fan base.
Come on.
Yeah.
And say that
to
that extent, I will retire.
I will jump off a cliff.
There is only one team I will ever play for.
There's only one nation, and it's the Raider Nation.
I like him saying, I'll go down with the ship. The idea of being like, all of the Raiders, even when we're bad.
Yeah. Just like,
he's had one winning season. I bet a lot of...
It is obnoxious is what it is. It's obnoxious. I don't believe it. It's not heartfelt. I don't believe him. Like,
no, I don't believe him. But I think
he tweeted out something a few months ago that like the first word his newborn son said was Raiders. It's like, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
You liar.
That's a lie.
You're
that's
a liar.
A lie.
Okay.
That's the type of stuff he does.
No.
And that's why it drives you crazy. You're 100% right, Curtis. It's that kind of stuff. You are lying through your teeth just to pander to the fan base.
Yeah. Do you remember Jackson's first word? Isn't every baby's first word
was,
like mama?
No,
dada,
it was
dada.
I think
easy
it was
ones.
I think it was kitty. I think it was cat, actually. If I remember right,
was it Raiders? Was it Seahawks?
Potentially, maybe I'm going to get a text from Brooke and be like, "What are you talking about?" But I think that was his first word.
Rays pitcher Tyler Glass now becomes blames MLB's crackdown on foreign substances for his torn UCL injury. Here he is talking about it.
But I just threw 70 whatever innings, and then you just told me I can't use anything in the middle of the year. I had to change everything I've been doing the entire season, everything out of the window. I have to start doing something completely new. And then I'm telling you, I truly believe that's why I got hurt. Me throwing 100 and being 6'7" is why I got hurt, but that contributed. And so I'm just frustrated that like they don't understand how hard it is to pitch one, but to tell us to do something completely different in the middle of a season is insane. I just don't, it's ridiculous. There has to be some give and take here. You can't just take away everything and not add something. Pitchers need to be able to have some sort of control or some sort of grip on the ball.
I agree with two premises here. One, that doing it during the middle of the season, having that crackdown during the middle of the season, even though ahead of the season you said it would be a focus, is kind of weird timing. It's not super convenient for anyone, really. Secondly, that pitchers maybe should be allowed a basic kind of substance, right? Like he said that he used sunscreen and rosin, and that's he never really went for more than that. And I think most pitchers around the league understand that as something where it's like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with guys doing that. The problem isn't that banning a foreign substance caused you to get an injury. The problem is you can still think you can pitch the same way without any foreign substance. And because you're trying to over-adjust or doing whatever to try to pitch at that velocity and have that same spin rate, I'm assuming, like you're going to injure yourself. You're not going to be able to throw the way you did without a foreign substance. That's what makes it fairly a banned substance.
I can get on board with that. The idea that, look, maybe a pitcher is approaching it differently now that they don't have the substance on their hands and it doesn't allow them to control the ball the way that they do. So they're trying to generate more spin or try to generate that same spin rate that they had before. But overall, I don't think that you're looking at Glasnow's comments. And I don't think that they're going to truly resonate because I think it's a lame excuse in terms of overall the health of pitchers' arms being directly related to the lack of substances being on your hand. I think that Major League Baseball, the reason why it's odd timing, they forewarned you to start the year. And did they listen to the warning? Did they heed to the warning? No, they just blew right past it, didn't take you seriously. And Major League Baseball said, there is a serious problem going on. Everybody's seeing it. It is so obvious. We got Garrett Cole, who's touching the brim of his hat, and his hand can't even come off the lid of his hat in a normal way because there's so much substance on his hat. Like, we have to do something.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are making it too obvious. So if Glasnow, if you're going to be mad at anybody, be mad at the guys that are actually cheating, that are going one step ahead of you. And if you're just doing sunscreen and rosin, then that's I get
still
it. I understand the frustration. But you got Garrett Cole and everybody else using spider tack and all sorts of crazy stuff. Be mad at them, not the league.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it. All right. If you see Reggie Miller trending, well, that has something to do with our next story here. Here's the thing, guys. If you see a tweet anytime starting with, I'm just going to throw this out there to see what the responses will be, chances are
those responses are going to be wild.
And they were, because this is what Reggie Miller had to say. If you're Steve Nash in the Nets, would you sit James Harden and Kevin Durant in Game 6 because of the heavy minutes tonight and push all your chips to the center of the table for Game 7?
What?
Answer, no. No. Absolutely not.
That's exactly what my response was, Curtis. Exactly that sentiment.
No. I'm trying to really understand his argument, and I think I can see
what?
It. I just so fundamentally disagree.
Oh, it's just, why would you ever, ever just throw a game and risk it and put your chips on the table like Reggie Miller is saying in that last game? Like, I can't get on board with anything of Reggie Miller's strategy in terms of how the Brooklyn Nets should be handling this thing. If you win game six, you get yourself the opportunity to get legitimate rest after that. Go take care of business in game six. Don't leave it to chance in game seven. Anything can happen in game seven. Are you kidding me? I mean, Stacey, come on. Hey, like, what are we talking about here?
This is why Reggie doesn't have any rings, because this kind of mentality. I mean,
you would rather take your chances
in game seven when there's a chance you could be eliminated than just end it in game six. And what did the Bucks show you in game five that should have you worried? Nothing. They didn't show you anything. Take care of business in game six. You don't even have to worry about game seven. Yeah, it's game seven's great for us. We get to see a winner go home game. But if you're the Nets, you don't want to have even close to chance, especially with how dinged up your stars have been. James Harden, there was no guarantee he was going to play game five. Kyrie Irving's still out. It makes no sense to want to roll the dice.
Absolutely no sense. Reggie Miller, no, no, no.
All right, that is the timeline. Jake was out at Seahawks minicamp yesterday. He has some takeaways for us. He'll tell you guys everything you need to know. Do not go anywhere. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Seahawks mandatory minicamp continues today and tomorrow. Our own Jake Heaps going to be out there for today's practice and was out there yesterday. Jake, you're going to run us through everything that you saw. Let's go ahead and get started with your first practice observation.
Yes, let's get this thing rolling. Let's get the music queued up. Let's go.
Get a bed going. Go ahead and get us started, and then we'll follow you. We'll follow your lead.
Okay, all right, here we go. The first thing that I noticed right when I got there was the fact that they were actually kind of having a dual practice going on, and it is very different than anything that I've seen them do before, and it very much is still sticking to the idea that, hey, the Seahawks are going to take care of the vets. The vets obviously voicing their opinion of, we are going to come back, we're going to participate, we're going to do some team stuff together, some 7-on-7 stuff together, but ultimately, we want to take care of our bodies. We don't want to be doing consistent 11-on-11 stuff like we've done in the past. So what you ended up having
what dual practices are we talking about?
Is at one point in time, they ended up breaking away. The veteran players started basically having an extended individual period and individual time with their coaches. Receivers, Russell Wilson and crew did routes on air. The defensive guys basically were doing shadow work and route pattern work, and then pattern matching. And then the younger players, the guys that are basically on the second half of the roster, those guys were having 11-on-11 practice. And so I'm watching these guys, and you really get to see kind of where everybody's at, who needs reps, who is still in the developmental phase of things. And I couldn't help but think how jealous I was of Alex Magoo and Danny Etling for the amount of reps that they were getting versus my experience, because Russell Wilson wants to take all the reps. So it's a tremendous opportunity if you're a guy on the second half of the roster looking to make a statement, looking to make a name for yourself. And so I think what they're able to do here with this dual practice situation is they're getting a lot of reps to some of these younger guys, and that's not a bad thing. I think that's a very good thing to bolster the rest of your roster. And the older guys still getting a chance to work with your coaches, still getting a chance to be there, run through plays. I mean, Shane Waldron's going through the playbook with Russell Wilson and crew out there. And so it was very unique to see that dual practice go on.
All right, Jake, you got 7 takeaways, so that's one of them. What else do we got here?
The next takeaway that I have is that, as I just mentioned, Russell Wilson, after practice, stayed 40 minutes after practice to throw with anybody who wanted to throw, running through stuff with Shane Waldron, taking that extra time, just basically soaking up every single minute that they're allowed humanly possible out on the field to work together. And I thought that was really, really cool. It was also really weird, Stacey, because when the main official part of practice ended, the rest of the media went over to get ready for their interviews with some of the players and Pete Carroll. I was the only person out on the berm up on the hill watching that final 40 minutes.
Whoa, someone texting in, rightly so, 206, Jake creeps.
Yes.
Just watching.
That's
on
how
the
I
berm,
felt. I
like
was up there, like, looking up
you
there,
weirdo.
Like, this is kind of weird. And then you, every now and then,
yourself.
you'd see Coach Carroll, you'd see John Schneider, you see some of the coaches, like, look
squinting
up at me,
like, who
is that? Oh, it's Jake. Okay. All right. Whatever. That's weird. But I'm just trying to, you know, get all the sights and sounds and watch everything. And it was really cool to see that extra time. And then, you know, he had time with Coach Carroll talking. And then him and John Schneider actually talked for quite a bit one-on-one out on the field before they ended up walking off the field. And then directly after that, Stacey, we all saw the picture and Russell Wilson coming in and jumping in on Pete Carroll's interview. That was right after him and John had a conversation one-on-one out in the field. Both those guys go in there and try to have some fun with Pete for that press conference. So it was kind of cool to see how all that ended and kind of just being a fly on the wall.
All right, speed round through these next four, Jake. Please tell me you have a takeaway about defense. What's next?
Yes, I do. Akilla Witherspoon. Gosh, that guy looks the part. When you talk about the cornerback position, what you're looking for, size, length, he looks even bigger in person than what I was anticipating. I was expecting him to be more of like a Quentin Dunbar type. He is long and lanky, but he's a little bit more stout and put together than what Quentin Dunbar was. And one of the other things that was unique is that when they broke up into individuals, he wasn't with the other corners. He actually was paired away with new DB coach Deshaun Shedd.
Like so, one-on-one?
One-on-one, working together. And so Deshaun Shedd, I think this is a pet project for Shedd to really, really give all the insights and sounds to Akilla Witherspoon. And if I'm Witherspoon, I am going hip-to-hip with that guy because Shedd is extremely smart, really bright, knows that scheme inside and out. And so I was really, really pleased to see those two guys paired together and working together, because if Shedd and Akilla Witherspoon can maximize this guy's talent, he's going to be a good one for the Seahawks.
All right, your next observation, going back to offense for this one, Jake.
We talked about Gerald Everett here in cut number 10. Pete Carroll talking about how this guy actually is a very, very exciting addition.
He's just an incredibly exciting addition. Because of the flexibility, you can line him up out of the backfield. He can be in the slot. He can be outside. All of that stuff. He's got wide receiver ability as a tight end. So that's a real positive for us, and I'm really pumped about that. He knows everything. He knows the offense too. So he's just been really pleasantly just a great addition.
Now, it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to be able to implement it. I think one of the last things that Pete Carroll said that's so true, that was so obvious in terms of the way Everett runs the routes and everything else, is that he is so comfortable. He understands this offense. He knows exactly where to be, what the timing is, and that helps. That helps when it comes to a new relationship with Russell Wilson out on the field, and it helps with everybody around him. But my gosh, Gerald Everett is a fluid athlete. He is basically an extension of a receiver in a tight end's body. He is fast. He is fluid with his hands. And he is a true chess piece that they can move around to create mismatch situations. And that, to me, is really exciting, particularly when it comes to third downs, particularly when it comes to moving the chains. And I think that Gerald Everett's going to find himself a really nice role, an impactful role, and it was great to see him throwing with Russell Wilson out on the field looking smooth.
All right, very, very last one, and it's a quick one here, Jake. I need to hear something about at least one of the new rookies. You got two notes here, though.
I do. When you talk about that dual practice, both of these guys, as you could imagine, was out in that 11-on-11 portion of the practice. That's two rookies. Your fourth-round pick in Trey Brown and also Stone Forsyth, your offensive tackle prospect and developmental prospect that you have. Stone Forsyth went up against, look, I don't know if this is indictment on Rasheem Green or what, but Stone Forsyth looked really, really good going up against Rasheem Green, a guy that's going into year four of the league, who's had success. Stone looked really big, really strong, very sure of himself. His technique was really sound as he was doing his kick steps, and I did not see him get beat once by Rasheem Green. That's number one. Number two, Trey Brown, I know it's not against DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett, but what I saw was him being instinctive, him breaking up a couple plays, and I saw him be an explosive, fluid athlete. And if he can play with that type of aggression and that type of playmaking ability within this defensive scheme, I'm going to feel really, really, really good about where the cornerback position is at. And I think Trey Brown flashed to me a couple plays there, exactly the reason why I could see John Schneider, Pete Carroll fall in love with this guy and feel like he could be a great addition, not as a slot corner, as a nickel corner, but a guy out on the edge bringing that playmaking ability. So I like what I saw from that young corner.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. We have even more questions about minicamp, whether it's Pete Carroll's responses about Dwayne Brown, what kind of money Jamal Adams is looking for, what injuries we should or shouldn't be worried about. So let's turn to NBC Sports Northwest. Joe Fan, he joins us next. Do not go anywhere.